Well, I'm kicking it off today here at the Music Production Deaf Room. My name's Jeremy. And first of all, I want to thank Lorenzo Minero and Stephen Goodwin for hosting this Music Production Deaf Room. But let me move on. Like I said before, my name is Jeremy. I'm also known as Autostatic on the interwebs. That's my nickname. I'm a Linux specialist engineer by trade, so that's my work. And I work for SURF, which is the Dutch National Research and Education Network. And there I am a Linux specialist, so I'm maintaining the internal Linux systems. What I didn't add here is that I'm also a musician. I make music, I play guitar, I do vocals. And I play in several bands, punk rock band, indie rock band. And I've been making music since I was 14. I'm 52 now, so that's like almost 40 years. When it comes to Linux, I've been using it since like the end of the 90s. And I got involved in doing audio with Linux around 2007. And I really got hooked up during the first Linux audio conference that I visited in 2010 in Utrecht. And then that really got me going regarding Linux audio and doing music production on Linux. But back to the matter at hand. When you want to start doing music production on your Linux machine, you have to start somewhere, of course. First of all, you start with your hardware, so your computer and audio interface. Also cables, yeah. I can demo it later on, maybe, or you can ask me afterwards if you have any questions, or I can show stuff. I recently bought a USB cable from a renowned German company. All my cables are from the same brand, so also the microphone cables, speaker cables, USB cables also. I bought a new cable, plugged it in, and I wiggled it a bit, and my interface was just failing. So those kind of things happen, so cables are really important. Then you have your equipment, your computer and such, and you move on, of course, you have to install a distribution on it. Kind of speaks for itself. Then you move on with installing the software you want to use. You can choose for a modular setup so that you have different pieces of software talking with each other using jack or pipe wire. Or you can use a monolithic approach, so use Reaper, Bitwig, Arder, Studio Fender, or anything else that runs on Linux. When you're using this monolithic approach, you can add your plugins in there. It can also be done with a modular setup if you use something like a plugin host like Carla, or use your DAW as a plugin host and then, you know, connect all your other stuff to it. Next up is like you have to choose an audio framework that you want to use, because like when you use a monolithic approach, you have a bit more choice, because with a modular approach you cannot use the driver directly, the driver stack, like the ALSA driver stack. So you have to then you can use pipe wire or jack for that in a modular setup. You can also use jack or pipe wire with Arder or with Reaper, but most of the time it's like it's when you're using a monolithic setup, it's easier to use just the driver stack. So just click ALSA and then everything should work magically. Well, not always, but we'll see later. Next up is if you want to go a little bit further and use a different kernel, you can use the standard kernel, the generic kernel. It's these days the modern kernel, like the six version is pretty good for doing low latency audio, so that's already quite okay. You can also use a specialized kernel like a real-time kernel, not really necessary anymore these days, or a something like a specialized kernel like Licorix. They offer a specialized kernel more or less for gaming and media stuff, but also does well for audio and music production. Then, of course, you have to set your buffers, which is sounds a bit esoteric, but the buffers is like the some kind of cache between your audio software and your audio interface. Your operating system has to buffer something before it can receive or send the audio. And of course, you can set your buffers as low as you as low as possible. But then you have other issues, like when you load your plugin or your you have a lot of tracks, then you can see the load of your system going up. And you have to find a nice balance, especially when doing mixing, for example, of the buffer size and the load on your machine. So, for example, when you're doing live stuff, you want your buffer size to be as low as possible, because when you press a key on the MIDI keyboard, you want it to be outputted immediately as fast as possible. But that comes with a drawback that the DSP load can get high quickly if you're on a less performant machine. But with modern machines, you can go quite low and do quite a lot of stuff at the same time at low buffer sizes. Most people are using USB devices these days. And on Linux, you can configure your buffer size to accommodate for that, because the USB protocol uses a queuing mechanism that takes about 1 millisecond to get the packages from your system to the USB device. So if you can match your buffer size with that 1 millisecond rule, then you run into less issues with those X runs or glitches or that kind of stuff. What you also want to know is, when starting with music production, is what the round-trip latency of your system is. That means that if you connect an input and an output and use a specialized software, or Ardour can do it also, you can measure the round-trip latency, how much it takes signal from the output to the input. You can measure that. And of course, you want an audio device that has the lowest possible round-trip latency, especially when you're doing live stuff, of course. You can compensate for it, but that's more than you go already into detail for what a DAW can do. I just was shown a device that runs on Linux that is a bass guitar effects unit. It has a round-trip latency of 1.3 milliseconds, which is amazing. It runs with a buffer of 16, which is one of the lowest buffers you can get. So that's amazing stuff. So that is possible, but that's really for a live setup. Then that's really nice to have. Now, of course, the last thing you need is time. You have to commit yourself, be patient with what you're trying to achieve. And yeah, sometimes stuff can go wrong. You have to get ready for that. You could lose a session, or you could have huge glitches or audio problems. But there's a lot of help out there, so you can always ask, and you can always you have to find the time to accept that sometimes things do not go the way you want them to. Next up is how you can improve the performance once you have set up your machine. Because there are a few steps you can take to get the most out of your machine. First thing you can do is check the CPU scaling governor. Most of the times it's set to like power save or on demand, which means that the CPU is scaling its frequencies When the computer is doing nothing, it runs at a lower frequency. When the computer has to do a lot, it runs at a higher frequency. What you want to do with when doing audio is to have a constant frequency scale, and preferably the fastest one, the highest one, so that is in most cases performance. And so you can tell your system to use that governor and make sure it runs that governor all the time, so that the CPU doesn't scale when you're doing audio, because when it scales, it can happen that an X run occurs. An X run is a buffer underrun in the driver stack, and you don't want that. So make sure it runs the highest available governor. Next thing is the simultaneous multithreading, also known as hyperthreading. That means basically means that a core will be split into two, and different threads are running on the same core simultaneously. Some audio programs are not very fond of that. Arder is a good example. So it is best to, or you could choose for disabling it, and then have only your real physical cores running, and have your audio software running on those physical cores. And in some cases, like with Arder, and probably also with other DAW software, it's it can be an option to get less X runs and less buffer underruns. Another thing is the CPU DMA latency. Processor wants to go into power saving mode when it doesn't do anything. And if you set the DMA latency to zero, then that doesn't happen. And you can set it in Arder, for example. This also makes sure that the CPU doesn't do anything you don't want when you're doing audio. It just stays at the same power saving mode. It stays on or active, to say, all the time. This can also help very much in reducing the X runs. Of course, you want a user to set real-time priorities. You can prioritize processes and threads on a Linux system. And if you're doing audio, the real-time priorities is what you want to work with. That's also what Arder does, for example. It has audio threads, and it sets a real-time priority for it. But in order to do that, you have to give your user the right permissions to set those priorities. And you could run a specialized kernel, or use kernel options to improve the kernel you're already running. I don't think there are any kernel that, like the generic kernels for like Debian or Ubuntu or Arch, they are already running in preempt dynamic, if I'm correct. So you can set the preemption level, but by default it's already full, I think, so in most cases. So that means that you have a kernel that is already is already very capable of doing real-time audio stuff. Those are the most important things to improve the performance of your Linux system. There are also some myths and lore going around of what you can do more to improve the performance of your system. And that is to change the frequency of the clock sources. Well, there was someone who said on the internet, even recently, that software like Rose Garden, which is a sequencer, uses the HPET clock source. I grabbed the source, it doesn't do it anymore because it relies on something else now. Same goes for the kernel timer frequency. People change it to 1,000 hertz, because they think that they have less jitter or that it sounds better or that their computer is more responsive. But most, if not all, audio software, when you start it up and you check the timers of your system, You see a new timer getting added, which is the ALSA high resolution timer, which has a resolution of 1 megahertz, so that's a lot more than 1,000 hertz you can configure with the config HZ setting of your kernel. So just use that and don't bother with the kernel timer settings. You can also use threaded IRQs. That means that every system has IRQs, of course, to communicate with the peripherals. You can prioritize those so that they don't get preempted. But people then add thread IRQs to their kernel options. But then the next thing they do is, like, they do nothing with it. They think that already the option alone does magic, but it doesn't. You have to configure it later on. Well, using a real-time kernel is not really necessary anymore, because since like September 2024, with the 6.12, I think the whole real-time patch set was like merged with the mainline kernel. Yep. And so it's not really necessary to run a real-time kernel anymore, because you have, like I said, most kernels are running in preempt dynamic mode, so you can add a kernel option if you really need to. Renice processes, that's another thing that people tend to do. It doesn't really work because the scheduler thingy for Nice is sked other, while we're in the audio realm. You work with real-time priorities, and that's sked FIFO or sked RR round robin. And well, any process that has been niced will be preempted by a real-time prioritized process, so doesn't really do anything. And then there's this iNotify max user watches that pops up every time on every wiki page that somebody starts up. It's something that people Google, and then they just put it on their wiki because apparently you have to do this, but it does really nothing. The only thing this does is like hiring or raising the amount of files a program can watch. You need it for when you're developing, for example, when you have like an IDE that with a lot of folders open, with a lot of source code in there, with a lot of subdirectories, then you need all those watches because your IDE wants to know what's going on in all those directories. But in case of a DAW or doing a modular setup, this has really no use. The tools you can use to check the latest or check your system or improve the system are, I wrote a tool called the RTCQS, so the real-time configuration quick scan. It was initially written by Raboof, by Arnold van Engelen, who did a talk yesterday for the Nixos community. And it wasn't written in Perl, but I ported it to Python. On top of that, somebody built a nice GTK 4 or 5 UI even, called Millisecond, which is really nice, but under the hood that uses RTCQS. You can check the DSP load in Ardor or with check, so you can see how much headroom you have left. If you run a lot of plugins and you're already at like 80% DSP load, then you know that you cannot add much more, but you can also then use the DSP load to balance, find a balance in your buffer size, or try tweaking stuff so that the DSP load might decrease. You can use XRun counter that's a little C program written by Hermann Brummer from the Guitarix suite. It's a bit of a spin-off, small project. You can use it to do stress tests. It then runs something to raise the DSP load, and then at a certain moment it bails out with an XRun, and that gives you a kind of a starting point, because then you can start comparing on other machines or in your own machine with different settings when the first XRun occurs at which DSP load. It's a real fun tool. I could show it afterwards if people want to. But you can also use the renowned cyclic test. I was just told that with the device with the 16 frames buffer with the 1.3 round trip latency, they did cyclic test on it and it had like a 5 millisecond, microsecond, yeah, microsecond. Cyclic test is in microseconds, like a system latency of 5 microseconds. Well, on my machine, I get like between 30 and 60, so. And you could check the I/O latency in order. That's the round trip latency. You can check or you can use that tool to know your to get to know your system better. You could also dive even deeper. Prioritize your IRQs. There's software for that. You could disable kernel mitigations or use different kernel options. I won't dive deeper into that because I have to hurry up a little, but I'm already at the end of my presentation. So you can reach me here. I will be sticking around in this room for the rest of the day, I think. So, thank you for listening and enjoy the rest of the talks.
Thanks, Jeremy. While we switch presentation, Asep, could you come and start switching? If you have some questions for Jeremy, we have a couple of time for a couple of them. We'll use the mic so that people from home can listen to them too.
Hey, thank you for the nice talk. It's here. Thank you for the nice talk. A quick one. When you're in a creative space, when you want to be in a creative space, sitting and configuring the whole machine kind of gets you out of that flow. Do you think there should be some kind of a spin that configures everything in the most effective manner and you can just get up and boost going like a music spin of a distro or something like that? Is there something already like that?
Because you mean a piece of software that can configure your machine for you?
Yeah, like a Linux spin that has all the music configurations optimally configured that you can
It's getting a bit busier with people changing.
Yeah, I just mean that a Linux spin that has all the essential configurations set, everything that you can just boot up and then get going. You don't have to muck around with the configs when you want to start making music.
Oh, yeah, so yeah. You mean like a spin, like a
music spin.
Yeah, a customized distribution.
Yeah.
Yeah, that something like that already exists. It's called AVL Linux. So, yeah, that's possible, but it's very dependable on what, on your machine, so you cannot move it to another machine because then probably works less good. Other questions? Oh,
it's not so much of a question; it's a comment regarding the tools. Something coming on the next Jack release because there's currently an issue where you're trying to measure your CPU load or DSP load in the Jack graph. Right now, it uses an average, which sometimes can look wrong. So the next release is going to support also a maximum value, which is much more useful because of the spikes within the DSP load.
Exactly.
If you have a maximum value, it's a lot useful for knowing your performance of the system. Yeah, not really a question, but a comment for the next stuff to come that we can add in the tools.
Thanks. Yeah, that's awesome.